Working Cows Podcast, episode 269. This episode is brought to you by Mystic Lubricants. For a look at their full range of top quality products, visit mysticlubes.com.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. This is Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast, powered by the Global Ag Network, and this episode is brought to you by Mystic Lubricants.
Since 1922, Mystic Lubricants has been providing superior performance and protection for farmers who demand the most out of their equipment. Today, Mystic continues to develop products in real-world conditions that are specially formulated to meet the unique demands of your specialized machines. They provide advanced protection for engine longevity and are the choice of people who make a living working the land. Learn more about Mystic products at mysticlubes.com. That's M-Y-S-T-I-K lubes.com.
Very excited to be joined today once again by Michelle Patton. Michelle was a guest a while back. She was part of a business at that time called Patton Bookkeeping Services, and she has since transitioned to a new business called Ag Biz Consultants, and they are doing just kind of what the name says, consulting ag businesses. And today we're going to talk to her about the three keys to transitioning a family business, and kind of some of the key documents that need to be in place, and how that works, and how we accomplish that successfully. And so, really excited about this conversation. Very much looking forward to diving into this and hearing what Michelle has to say, bringing a unique perspective with her bookkeeping experience and her just her own ranch experience on the family ranch that she is a part of with her husband. And so very excited to welcome back to the show once again, Michelle Patton. Thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast.
Yeah, thanks, Clay. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here and talk to you about all the new things we've got going on.
Yeah, you've gone through a bit of a transition. I guess we talked to you last time on episode 123 of the Working Cows Podcast, and talked to you about outsourcing bookkeeping, and have kind of gone in a little bit different focus with the business that you're running there. I think it was Patton Bookkeeping Services last time, now Ag Biz Consulting. Is that right?
Yeah, so we're now the Ag Biz Consultants. And we still provide bookkeeping services, but we have made a bit of a transition to try to focus more on the business consulting and family farm and ranch transition planning.
Sure. And what was kind of the motivation for that transition in your business focus?
Yeah. So, you know, the biggest thing was I've always tried to focus on how I can make the biggest impact, you know, being one person with a few people who help me in my business. And I had a client who went through kind of a difficult time in his life. He was farming. Both of his parents passed in a very short period of time. And he really needed the help and the support, but there wasn't a framework there for him to be able to effectively transition plan, I guess you could say, to plan that transition from what his parents were doing to what he was doing. And he had siblings. And so it was just a very complicated issue. And, you know, that would have been so much easier to work through before his parents had passed. So that was really, for me, kind of the turning point when I realized, wow, I wish I would have been able to help him before that happened. And so that's when I really started focusing on the transition planning and consulting for that, you know, period in people's life.
Yeah. And it's a challenge, in those situations, because it's kind of an emergency, like the transition really has happened.
Exactly.
You know, the older generation is gone. It's transitioned to a younger generation, but the logistics and how does this get sorted out and who gets what and who has what responsibilities, none of that is there. So you've got to make some decisions on the fly, and those are some pretty high pressure decisions and some pretty consequential decisions. And, you know, I think sometimes in those moments, things get said that can't get taken back. And so it can be kind of a hard situation to navigate.
Exactly. Yeah. I really felt bad for him and his siblings because they just had no plan on what to do, no way to, you know, they really didn't know what should happen, honestly. And they all kind of were trying to decide for themselves what they needed to do with their lives, but also make a joint decision together. And so it was difficult and it was kind of heated. And knowing that had we done that beforehand, I think everyone would have been, you know, much more prepared and much happier with the results. Just knowing what to expect, I think, is like half of the struggle there.
I guess, what would you say, would be the kind of the direction, or that's kind of, I hesitate to say worst case scenario,
yeah.
But it's a bad situation. It's a difficult situation, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good or bad, I guess, is what you make of it, but it's a difficult situation. And so what would you say kind of is the alternative option with some foresight and some planning and some proactive management? What would you say is the other option?
Yeah, so the other option would be to have some kind of operating agreement between the farming child or the farming children, which is kind of interesting to talk about that way because these people were in their 50s.
Right.
So, you know, he'd been working for his dad or working with his dad his whole life. So an operating agreement for that sibling or those siblings, depending on how many kids are at home working on the farm or the ranch. And then a transition plan, which would be in agreement between the landowners, the kids who are farming, and also the non-farming kids would agree to this agreement as well. Just saying, you know, what is the farming person going to do? How are they going to pay the landowner? You know, essentially assigning responsibilities and roles and how the money is going to work and all of that. And then having a will that coincides with that operating agreement and that transition plan. You know, you've really got your three main, documents that you need to work out. And then you can also take into consideration life insurance policies, retirement accounts, things like that as well. You know, bank accounts, money that is owned personally or by the farm. And so having these in place, and I think it's important to get everyone's buy-in as well. You know, if the parents and one of the children sit down and make all these agreements and they leave the other kids out, obviously that's their, you know, they have every right to do that. But, you know, no matter how you swing it, those other siblings are going to be affected when the parents pass. And I feel like they should at least have some input on it. Once you have everyone's buy-in and everyone's goals are aligned and these documents are created, everyone has that kind of legal protection that way and financial protection and, you know, a plan in place to know what will happen. And that, in my opinion, would be the best case scenario.
Yeah. I was just at an advisory council meeting for an organization here in South Dakota. And we kind of had this sensitive subject that nobody really wanted to talk about, but we all kind of knew that we needed to talk about. And finally, at one point in the meeting, I just spoke up and said, clarity is best. You know, if we can be clear, if we all know where we stand on this issue and we can just put it down in writing, that's going to be better for everybody. And I think that kind of what you're saying is in agreement with that an operating agreement, a transition plan, and a will, those three documents kind of are real helpful tools in making sure that everybody knows, right? We don't have to guess when, you know, hopefully at the ripe age of, you know, 92, somebody passes away in their sleep. We don't have to guess what happens now. We all know. We've all got the document and we know what it looks like. So Could you kind of just walk me through those operating agreement? What are some of the key elements of that? What are some of the things that that needs to have?
For the operating agreement, I think that the most important things to include in that are the roles. So the role that everyone plays, including the off-farm family members, they might have a role or they might have a small role. You know, oftentimes you will have, you know, your 9-to-5 working brother will come and help at harvest, or, you know, they might drop everything they need to do and come help brand once a year. And that is, it's a small role, but it's a role and they are helping. And so, you know, is the child, are they partial landowners? Are they complete landowners? Are they considered a lessee, or are they, so your roles is going to be the first part. And then, included in that roles, you're going to need your responsibilities. So who does what, and, when does that need to be done? And most of that is pretty self-explanatory, but you'd be surprised sometimes. and I think that helps too when if dad is not really on the farm, but he still feels like he needs to make these management decisions, maybe everyone agrees that it's time for him to pass that responsibility on. And that can take a really big burden off of him, or him and his wife, or whoever. And then the next thing is, how are people being compensated? That's something that it can be very hush-hush on, you know, these family farms. They might not want the off-farm family members to know how everyone's being compensated, but I think that that should be transparent along with everything else. So you're going to decide what compensation is. Do the off-farm family members get paid when they come and do things? I think that they should. You know, the management, who's getting paid to manage the farm or the ranch, who's getting paid to do the actual physical labor. And so you need to cover that. And then you need to decide basically how is the money being paid out to the different people as far as the actual, when you go and you sell your crops, when you go and you sell your cattle, is it a cattle lease and a land lease, or equipment lease and land lease? And then how is that being figured out? Are you doing a crop share or a per dollar, you know, a fixed amount per year? So basically that's what your operating agreement is going to cover, is just basically the who, how, what, and that. So you're just basically figuring out how things are done by who and how people are being compensated, and kind of trying to decide the financials behind it a little bit. And so that just kind of gives transparency to how the farm or ranch should be run. And but that might also include, this probably could be included in your transition plan, but you could include in your operating agreement if the farming family member is planning on purchasing land, what's the rate? Does that continue into if the landowners are passed? Basically, the siblings are agreeing to, if they end up inheriting part of that land, they're agreeing to continue that, land sale or whatever. So that might be sweat equity. It might be actually paying money. You might be getting a discount for being the farming kid. And so that can also be included in there if there's going to be any land transfer, before, the passing of the landowners.
Do you have any best practices recommendations in that regard, or is it kind of just figure out what is acceptable for the family and get it down in writing? I mean, do you have some things that you say, this, I've seen this work better than that, or do you have anything that you recommend one way or the other on any of these, you know, roles, responsibilities, compensation, financials, land sale, those kinds of things, or is it just kind of the discipline of getting it down on paper?
Yeah, I think that's the most important part. And something to remember is that this isn't permanent. You can always make another one. You know, like, don't go into it thinking that, oh no, this is, we have to stick to this forever. You know, obviously things change. And so I think it's better to not worry about it being perfect the first time around. You're probably going to revise it. And I definitely recommend that you do, because 5 years pass and a lot has changed. And so I recommend looking at it every few years. But I think that the one thing to keep in mind is that often with the on-farm or the on-ranch family member, there is sort of this thing hanging over them in that sweat equity and saying, well, one day you're going to get paid for your hard work. You know, mm-hmm. they get a salary, but it's probably not going to be what they could earn if they went out and, you know, had a 9-to-5 job or something, or were running their own place. And so here they are, they're like, yeah, you know, I'm working hard because I'm going to get, I don't know what it is.
Right.
Some more money, a bigger share of the ranch when mom and dad pass, you know, so that's always sort of hanging over them. And if that's not on paper, you know, a legal agreement, it's really null and void. It doesn't really even count. And so that's something that I really think that always needs to be considered with an operating agreement and your transition plan. And I think that the best way to do that is to transfer ownership on an annual basis based on an agreement. Of course, that's easier to do, like if you have a corporation, by transferring shares, you know, they just become a little bit more owner.
Equity stake.
Exactly. And, but as long as everyone agrees to it, it is something where, when the assets are in probate, you ensure that sweat equity is accounted for at that time. But it absolutely needs to be written down and agreed upon by everyone, because otherwise it is very easy to overlook. If the will says, I have 5 kids, they get 1/5 interest in everything, that's not accounting for the sweat equity that,
right.
you know, the one farm or ranch kid spent 50 years committing to the ranch and, you know, was being paid under market value while the other ones were out, you know, building their careers and everything. So that's the one thing that I feel like can be the trickiest to really decide, is that worth? But it definitely needs to be, I feel like, front of mind, really. And that's, I think, also going to help avoid a lot of the tension if that's taken into account beforehand as well.
What we know for sure is that the Mufasa and Simba, someday this will all be yours. Succession plan is not acceptable.
Exactly. Yeah, that is so true.
So, yeah, I think that those are some really helpful just things to think about as far as how does that get transitioned? How are we compensated for sweat equity? I think that we should start to, if not have a full blown anaphylactic shock allergic reaction to the word sweat equity in ranching, because so often it is connected to that someday this will all be yours succession plan that yeah. has not served many people well. And so I think it's just important to recognize that and try to come up with a better way of doing it. And one of the other things you mentioned under the operating agreement is responsibilities, and it's who does what and when does that need to be done. Well, I think we're the 2 points under that. Is that with regard to just the year in, year out production schedule of the operation, or is it who does what and when does that need to be done with regard to this succession plan getting hammered out?
Yeah, I think that's going to be, well, you could include both, but I like for the transition plan or the succession plan to happen at the same time as this operating document. So for the operating agreement, it's mostly just, yeah, like you said, the ins and outs of your regular, you know, all the work that needs to be done on the farm and the ranch. It's basically what, if you had a hired man, the, you know, how you would explain to him what he needs to do and when and what he would be paid. And like I said, I think exactly it is. And it's overlooked a lot, I think, because people just assume everyone knows what they should be doing, but that's not always the case. And a lot of times things don't get done because that's overlooked.
Right. Yeah. I think that is everything on operating agreement that I had on my mind. The next thing was the transition plan. What are some of the elements of that? I think that you said that maybe land sale could be included in that, but also could be included in the operating agreement as shares maybe are transferred. I guess just going back to the operating agreement real quick. I think you mentioned what kind of business structure maybe would that be under transition plan? Would the like LLC or any of that be under transition plan, or would it be?
I would include that in the operating agreement. I think you'll have your entities and all that decided for the most part while you're running through your operating agreement and decide the ownership. That's generally one of the very first things that I do when I'm working with a family is if they have entities in place, we go through that, determine if it's working for them, you know, and if they don't have anything in place, we try to figure out what would be the best setup for that. You know, some farm families have three entities, some have none. And usually what's going to work for them is going to be somewhere in the middle there. But yeah, so that's, I think for me is usually the first thing that we really look at hard is determining ownership, which entities, who owns what. And so for me, that's, I include it in both the operating agreement and the transition plan both. So.
Gotcha. Okay. So yeah, what is under transition plan? What are some of the things that you would have included there?
Yeah. So that is going to, for the transition plan, that is, you want to include, make sure that every entity, all of the assets of every entity are included on this, and you are determining the schedule of how those assets will be transferred. And so that would mean what is transferred now, basically, what's going to be transferred later. And how that's going to happen. So like we were talking about, if there's any sweat equity, which I completely agree with you, that's something that I think that should be avoided altogether and that people should just be compensated fairly to start with. I think that's just the, you know, the best practice of how to do things.
But I think it's I recognize it's a cash flow issue. It's not, it's not always possible. And so but I think that again, it's not really sweat equity if there is a percentage transferred every year, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Sweat equity kind of evaporates with sweat.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So but if there's a percentage stake, an equity stake in the operation transferred every year, I would not call that sweat equity, but
mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Just working towards ownership. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And so that would be, essentially, your transition plan is what's going to kick into place when one or both landowners have passed. And so that's the tough part because you have to basically come up with three scenarios. At most farms and ranches, it's owned by mom and dad, either in, you know, personally or through an entity. And so you have to decide what happens when one passes, what happens when both passes. And so you're kind of coming up with three different scenarios essentially. And that's the case with wills as well. So you would need a will to correspond with each scenario. One will, but it would, one will for both individuals, but it would include each scenario to ensure that all of your I's are dotted and your T's are crossed essentially, because you don't want to have this, you know, transition plan that's theoretical and then not actually have a will to back it up with that's legal, filed, everyone signed it and agreed to it. So yeah, your transition plan is just saying at the point when person A or B passes, this is what they are going to own more or less at that point. And of those assets, who's going to receive what. It would include, like I said, you know, your physical assets, you've got your land, any equipment, any cattle, any of that, you know, buildings, all that that's going to be included on the land. And then also you've got your cash, you have any life insurance policies, anything like that, retirement policies that might be included as well. And so this is the point where obviously this is going to vary year to year, but I think it's going to make sense to say, determine a percentage of each asset so that it's, you know, it's easy to calculate. You don't want to, unless they have, some parents might have, they might want to put a certain amount of money to charity or something like that, you know, and then the remaining amount, but yeah, you're just saying, family member A, family member B, family member C, they're going to split these assets equally, or this asset is going to go completely to family member A, and B and C split these other assets equally. So for instance, the way I've seen this work that I feel like works well is farm and ranch assets would go to the farming family members, and then you would have the cash and life insurance, retirement accounts would go to the other ones. And, you know, when you've got a very large ranch, that might seem inequitable. And so you might need to play with that a little bit, where the other kids might end up with some ownership of the land, but they have the agreement to lease it back to the farming family member. So, you know, you're kind of working with different scenarios and what works for everyone, but you need to definitely keep all this in mind when you're deciding, making that transition plan and deciding how that's going to work. And some of your transition plan could be transitioned, you know, like I was saying, as the years go by, and maybe it's sweat equity in quotes, right. Yep. Maybe purchasing the shares at a certain price. And you know, so that all needs to be taken into consideration during that process.
Sure. Yep. So a couple of times throughout this conversation, you've mentioned everyone signs it. Everyone signed it and agreed to it. Is that farming siblings and non-farming siblings? Everybody's got a copy of the document. Everybody's maybe been involved in the development of the document and signed off on it. And how would you think about that?
I think both the operating agreement and the transition plan, everyone needs a sign. And then for the will, basically, any two people who own assets in common that could be separated, they both at least need to sign. And it wouldn't be a bad idea for everyone else to at least sign off on it as well, because there's always a chance that someone could say that they agreed to it and then later, you know, change their mind and try to receive more assets than they were originally agreed to. So I would like to see signatures for all family members who basically are material invested, all the on-farm, off-farm, and both parents if they're involved, and if they're landowners. So,
sure. And then the will is a legal document. I mean, I don't know. I guess, would you say that the other two are necessarily legal documents as far as the operating agreement and the transition plan?
They are. I mean, you don't, I wouldn't say that you need to have an attorney write anything up, but when you've all signed it, it's a legal binding agreement, and it can always be altered too. So that's something to think about. But yeah, I think they would be considered legal documents as well.
Sure. Gotcha. Yeah. So I guess we'll move on to that last piece, the will, and kind of what are some of the things that you like to see in there?
Yeah. So like I was saying before, we want to cover the three different scenarios, and how land or other assets are owned. Things can get extremely complicated at this point, because dad might own a piece of property separately, but in most states, when he passes, his wife, you know, legally receives that if she's still alive, and vice versa. And so unless you say otherwise in your will, that's how it's going to go down. And so dad would have a will that would say, he's basically going to mimic the transition plan and the different scenarios in there and say, yes, that's for my last will and testament. That is how I want it to go. And maybe there's a, you know, one portion of the will says, this is what happens if my wife is surviving. I want her to receive a lease payment. She retains ownership, and not until she passes does the land transfer or the other assets, maybe some of the assets transfer. So you just need to be very clear about what transfers and to who, and obviously set an executor, someone that you feel like can be impartial. You know that they will follow the agreement that everyone has agreed to for the transition plan, and follow the will the way that should be followed. And at this point, I think it's always a great idea to consult an attorney. And so I have an attorney who I consult with my clients, or if they are already working with someone, we work together at this point, because I feel like this document is probably the most important, and it's the one that can, we all know that wills can be changed. And so having everyone's agreement on this one is probably going to be the most important, because you don't want, you know, dad or mom going back and changing that later because they didn't feel like it was the right thing to do, you know? So yeah, this is going to be the pivotal document. This is going to be the document that basically supersedes all the other documents. And if this doesn't say what they say, it really doesn't matter. So I feel like the other two documents are almost the primer documents for the will to ensure that this is the final say, this is what's happening, and everyone knows. And if everyone can agree on it, we're going to be, you know, doing great.
Yeah, and I think that that kind of speaks to the reason why it's important to give this process time, to make sure that everybody does, you know, everybody understands the ins and outs, the I's are dotted, the T's are crossed. Everybody has a good idea of what all of the words in the document mean and who's, you know, getting what or whatever, however you want to say that. So that, like you said, it's everybody's comfortable with it. Everybody signed off on it. We don't have to worry about somebody going back and changing it because they had time to think about it. Whereas if you're in an emergency situation, you might make, you know, my senior pastor always used to say, and I think this was maybe one of the things that he learned in recovery. He would always say, never make a decision when you're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. And halt, H-A-L-T, hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, you know? So, I think that when we put ourselves in those high pressure situations, expecting people to make a good, well thought out, well reasoned decision is not ideal, or it's highly unlikely that they will make, or that, yeah, that they'll make a good, well reasoned decision in that scenario. So giving this process time on the front end so that everybody has time to think about it and think about all the, what are the consequences of these things that we're putting down on paper right now?
Yeah, exactly. And that is, this is generally a longer process with my clients. We don't want to whip it out in a couple of weeks. I almost always spend a few months working with these families, because just like you said, it takes the time. Everyone's got to really think through all of the different scenarios and how that's going to affect everyone. And I think it does help sort of have that empathy that could be lacking sometimes when you are in that, like you said, that emergency situation where you're having to decide all this and make those decisions. You can really take the time to put yourself in everyone else's shoes and to determine how is this going to affect my sister, my brother, my mother. And so that's, I think, a really good part of it, that that ends up happening just naturally through that process.
Sure. Yeah. So, the AgBiz consultants, talk to me about their role or your role in this process. What do you do to facilitate these documents and their formation and some of those things?
Yeah. So, I'm going to be facilitating all of the meetings. Obviously you guys can have meetings without me, but I have structured meetings in place and workbooks and different documents that we're going to use. We will do some goal planning for everyone individually, and then like a business goal planning worksheet. And we use that to determine, you know, different goals on how people are being compensated or how we feel like things should fairly be transitioned. Is there some back sweat equity that needs to be paid out? You know, things like that, that never actually, like you said, that evaporated with the sweat. And so I do a lot of, I'll do individual meetings with each family member, and then we'll do family meetings. We might do some meetings with just the on-farm members. And so I just have this whole process that we sit down together and do. And then I provide the templates for the documents, and then we'll sit down and make the decisions. And then I will, basically, at that point, I pass it on to my attorney, make sure that they decide, yep, this is all buttoned up, it looks great. And then we send it over to the clients and they sign it. And then we just kind of continue that process with each document until we're at the point where all the decisions have been made and all the documents have been prepared and signed.
Yeah, very good. And you said that it's a Do you do this process in person for the most part, as far as with your clients, or how have you approached that?
Well, so I've done it a couple different ways. Locally, obviously, it's very easy to do it in person, but I have done one remote process where we do everything by Zoom, except I always try to make it there for the last meeting, wherever they are, you know, and it, as long as that's something that's in their budget to have me come out and meet with them and make sure the final documents are all signed properly. I think it's important to have a third party be present during that, if that's at all possible. And then, it just all kind of depends on their location and their budget and everything, but I'm willing to be as present as needed for the clients to make the process work the best for them, you know.
Talk to me about your goal setting process. What does that look like? And what are some of kind of the things that you like to have be a part of that?
Yeah. So we always do personal goals first, because it's hard to separate what needs to happen with the business if you don't know what people really need and want personally. And so we're looking at financial goals, short-term and long-term. We're looking at family goals as far as how much time do they feel like they need with their family. And then we look at the goals of how they feel like the business should be working with them in their life, more or less. And then we take those goals, and after that, we will meet and do a business goals. And I think it just always helps to inform where we want the business to go if we know. Maybe they are trying to step back from the farm a little bit and have a little bit more personal time. Maybe they have small kids, and so they're not in a growth phase in the business at that point. They're maintaining, you know. Maybe they have a little bit older kids who might be interested in farming or ranching, and they're like, okay, now we're looking to grow, we're looking to acquire land, we're looking to find some lease, you know, things like that. And so that's where I feel like those personal and business goals are so intertwined and really so important to know both, because it's easy to say, yes, as a business, we want to do this, this, and this. But if the people who are in the business aren't on that same path, it doesn't work. And I've got a little, I call it a goal setting workbook. And every individual family member, and this includes spouses as well, because sometimes we kind of overlook spouses, you know, in this industry, as far as what they are really needing and wanting. And maybe they really don't want anything to do with the farm or the ranch. And that's their, you know, that's their choice. Or maybe they want to be more involved and they just haven't really had the opportunity to say so. And so we really just want to take everyone's personal needs and feelings and what they would like to see happen. And we take that and we wrap it up and try to make a final financial goal for the business. And we've set some timelines in term of, and that can be included in the operating agreement too, timelines as far as what you'd like to accomplish.
Yeah. And I think that so often a lot of these things go unsaid and uncommunicated. And I think probably frequently, I don't know if I would say more often than not, but frequently people are surprised by the goals of other people, even in their own family and in their own operation. Like, oh, I didn't know you wanted to be done in 5 years, or, oh, I didn't know that you, you know, wanted X, Y, or Z. So, you know, I guess, would you say that there's an age, as far as age of maybe the next generation that's coming up, that where you should start thinking, yeah, we should probably include them too, you know, 18, 25, you know, some of those, I definitely by 25, I would guess, but younger than that. I mean, would you say we should be including some of that next generation in this process too?
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's important to think of too, when you have like teenage age kids, a lot of time they are vital to a lot of the work in the farm and the ranch. And sometimes they're being compensated, sometimes not, you know, and so you need to decide if that's, they at least need to be included in, if they have a role in the farm. What is that role? What are they doing? How are they being compensated, at least in the operating agreement? But I think it's important for them to be involved in this process, even if they aren't really, they can probably go along with all of the business planning and the goal planning and all of that, just to kind of see what's happening and have that transparency and to understand a little bit more, maybe the farm financials. So I don't think that you should exclude even, you know, 12 years old. You know, they might have enough interest to mm-hmm. be able to see what's happening here. But at least, like you said, I would say by the age where they're out of high school and might have that interest, maybe they're out getting their degree, but you can still include them in the conversation. Even if they have no interest in coming back to the farm or ranch, I think this process will still affect them to a certain extent. And I don't think you can include too many people probably in this process, because if it's going to affect them, I feel like they'll have a say. Like you said, you might not know that, like my husband always said, I want to be back to the farm by the time I'm 35. I don't think he ever told his dad that,
right?
You know, it's like you were saying.
Yep.
And his dad told us the other day, yeah, he's thinking of retiring in a few years. It's like, what? Where did that come from? You know? So yeah, just having these conversations, really, people have their own timelines and you might not even know about them.
Right. Yep. Yeah. I think that that's really good as far as including the kids. Because this is a family business, you know, these are family businesses. We don't get things done if everybody doesn't pitch in, or if we try to do things without everybody pitching in, we end up burning somebody out. And so it's just the nature of these businesses. And so these kids have an equity stake in it. And they should, you know, we should hear their voices and value their input as well. Because they've got perspective that we don't too, you know. They're like, well, this time of the year, dad's not much fun to be around. So,
yeah, exactly.
Maybe we should approach that time of the year different or whatever, but yeah. So,
yeah.
So, Michelle, how can people get a hold of you if they wanted to work with you and some of those things?
Yeah. So I still have my old website up, patentbookkeeping.com. But I have launched a new website that really encompasses this transition planning and business consulting. And that is agbizconsult.com. So agbizconsult.com, and they'll find me there. And they can also just search the Ag Biz Consultants or Patent Bookkeeping on any, Google or anything, and they'll find me too.
Sure. Yep. And that link will be in the show notes page for today, workingcows.net/269. Workingcows.net/269 will be the show notes page for today, and we'll have a link to agbizconsult.com and those other links that you mentioned as well. As far as these three keys are concerned, did we kind of get them covered, do you think? Did we miss anything or anything else you want to say?
No, I think that pretty much covers anything. It can be a very complicated process. And I think just having a third party neutral person to be involved can help so much. Lower the tensions. I always try to make it fun for people so that they're enjoying themselves. It's not an excruciating process like people would think it would be. And so that's my end goal, to have everyone enjoy the process and everything at the end is as transparent as possible.
Very good. Yeah. No, I think that's a great way to look at it. I appreciate that very much. Michelle, thanks for your time today.
Yeah. Thanks, Clay.
Since 1922, Mystic Lubricants has been providing superior performance and protection for farmers who demand the most out of their equipment. Today, Mystic continues to develop products in real-world conditions that are specially formulated to meet the unique demands of your specialized machines. They provide advanced protection for engine longevity and are the choice of people who make a living working the land. Learn more about Mystic products at mysticlubes.com. That's mysticlubes.com.
Very good stuff there with Michelle. As always, really appreciate her time and her willingness to share some of that content with us and some of the things that she's doing to help farmers and ranchers more successfully transition their businesses to the next generation. And really looking forward to next week on the Working Cows podcast. Got a couple of different directions we could end up going. So we'll just let the suspense rest for a moment, and we will see you again real soon with another episode of the Working Cows podcast.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.